This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Strike is deflected. Equaliser for Aston Villa. Josh Onuma, the 20-year-old on loan from Tottenham, gets his side back on level terms just 4 minutes after falling behind.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me, I like to think of him as the Ramsay Bolton of the Villa universe, Dan Rogers of the villaunderground.com. Welcome, Dan. How are you?
Very well. On this glorious season that we're advancing into, there's cricket, there's Conor McGregor, there's Game of Thrones, and there's Aston Villa. What more do you need in your life?
Yeah, we were actually at the cricket together, but in different stands.
Separately.
Never saw you. This is the England West Indies test at Edgbaston, which...
wasn't a test.
Not really, was it?
I knew it wasn't much of a test when all the West Indian fielders had their hands in their pockets for most of the game.
Did you bother watching the McGregor fight, since you mentioned it?
I didn't wait up for it. I've reached that stage of life now where I go, I'll watch the extended highlights on Twitter and the following morning that becomes the acceptable. After all the furore, I thought...
No, I mean, I'm a boxing fan, but I saw that more as like some kind of a curiosity event rather than an actual sporting contest.
Nah.
You mentioned Game of Thrones and we've only got to wait, was it like 2 years now? And I'm hoping that Villa will be in the Premier League by the next season of Game of Thrones.
We'll have won the Champions League by then. It has been prophesied by the owner. No, not even Jesus can help us.
If Villa aren't in the Premier League in 2 years' time, this podcast will turn into a Game of Thrones podcast because we'll get hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Finally.
It's the quickest route we can get that kind of volume of listeners that we want.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. August 20th. My PhD degree is Doctor of Design in Urban Planning, not the doctor in the hospital. August 25th, felt soured last season, Bristol away game. Much better today though, we'd even betterer. September will be crucial for us. August 31st, though there's many things not we like, especially for people educated overseas, you still love your own country and learn to enjoy the life. August 31st. I don't want to say something hypocritical to make someone happy. It's no value to say some truth and offend someone. Keep quiet and working hard. August 31st. People said to us using financial fair play as excuses, bollocks. Even we did well to balance, still not far from red line, though we did do well this window.
Hashtag OTV.
The three points that start the show. First of all, it's made me laugh, actually. After Dr. Tony had said that Mr. Robert Snodgrass wasn't on our radar.
Journalists.
Fast forward a couple of weeks, he's a Villa player.
Shock horror.
Wasn't on our radar, but he's in our squad. The way Villa are doing this is obviously with the old financial fair play. If you can loan a player and you're just paying his wages, you're effectively spreading the cost.
Mm.
The rumours are that we're paying 70% of his wages. I don't know. I mean, would West Ham let him go for that? I mean, he's allegedly on around 60K a week or more than that. So we're paying about 45, I think, if that's true.
Yeah, I think that's an astonishing amount of money, first of all. Robert Snodgrass ultimately doesn't pick his own. I suppose he does pick his own wages, but it's for people to pay him. And it was a transfer that passed me by, that to go to West Ham for 10 million quid and then be shipped out after just 15 games.
Yeah, because he was kind of a Payet, a desperate Dimitri Payet replacement. And he's left-footed, but he didn't want to play on the left side where Payet kind of operated in. And so there's friction there because he wanted to be played in his best position, which according to... Mm. I mean, we'll talk about him in... we're recording another podcast after this one, listener question and answers, and somebody's asked about that. Anyway, number two, when you look at the five fixtures we've played this season and match them up to the corresponding fixtures of last season and obviously replace the teams that got promoted and relegated with each other in their corresponding positions, so Newcastle become Hull, we're actually down 2 points.
Yay!
Not much what you could call progress overall when you take those five games in isolation.
No, I think what we have to do is, I suppose, not focus too much on those terrible opening two games, and we need to find our trajectory.
Well, the opening two away games, because we drew against Hull in the first game.
The opening two away games. Just taking Bristol, and we'll get to the three games since we last had a podcast in a moment, but... I think in over the 90 minutes, that was a game we'd have lost last season. In the here and now, as we stand, I think that 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think we'd have lost that game.
Yeah.
So in my head, I see progress. We're not in a great place. We're not in the best position, nor the position I think that we should be in for the investment that we've had either.
Yeah.
But I do think that the trajectory is right.
Point number three is Cardiff, 100%. Oh. 5 wins out of 5. When we spoke about Neil Warnock recently, obviously after we played them, and this comparison where Warnock and Bruce took over their clubs, Cardiff and Villa respectively, in the same week, and now Warnock is overall, since they started, is 12 points up, and 10 of those points are this season.
Do you reckon they'll sustain that?
I don't know. I think he's got a team that he's got them organised now, and they're set up. You know, they can break on the counter. They're effective going forward, as we saw. They've got the spirit. I mean, he knows how to get players playing, and I think he's not messing around. I mean, you kind of said, oh, they'll lose as many as they win, I think, on the last show. I think he's definitely planning for playoffs, at least. He's looking for promotion, I think. Because, you've got to remember that old Vincent Tan, he sees this club as a Premier League team, because obviously... They've been in the Premier League under his guidance already. So, I mean, they're ultimately, that's where they want to be.
The only thing I'd say is I saw some extended highlights of Cardiff and Wolves' game, and I thought that they were fortunate, to be honest, Cardiff, and there were some shocking refereeing decisions in that game as well. So, I don't see them as like the Brighton or the Newcastle. That's really my point. I don't go, actually, they're a decent footballing team. I can see, having seen them play against us, I thought they were organised and they were
effective.
Effective is the word, yeah, that would be.
I'd be surprised if they finish outside the top 10, put it that way.
Okay.
I think they could threaten the playoffs. I mean, I don't think they'd probably sustain first position or automatic, but at the moment there's no outstanding candidates have put their hands up yet for automatic promotion, so we'll see.
No, that's very true.
That's why Villa's still got a chance.
Yes.
Right, let's move on to the Norwich game. We needed a reaction. I mean, first of all, people calling for his head before this game kicked off. I mean, it got pretty...
toxic, didn't it, really?
Pretty toxic after a matter of 3 games. and people saying he's a dead man walking and all these ridiculous, silly comments after three games. I mean, the reality is there's no way the Villa board are going to sack him after three games. So all this, but this is typical kind of reactionary Twitter. I mean, on my survey, the My Old Man Said survey that I've done so far, only 2.1% of Bruce out assessing what they thought of Steve Bruce. And if you looked at Twitter, it was almost like it was 90% Bruce out.
Twitter, as you know, is the sort of domain that I lurk in the darkest corners of, really. And the interesting thing about Bruce is the furore around, that was building around him prior to the Norwich game was almost risk of isolating myself here. So certain popular Villa blogs and Twitter feeds self-validating one another's belief that he should be sacked immediately. And actually, when you separated them out and you looked at some of the general conversation and rational discussion going on amongst Villa fans,
yeah,
it was saying all the things that I think... that if you strip away all of the bullshit modern footballisms, that you could really only gauge it over 6 to 10 games. I think we've seen improvements since, and I think in the Norwich team, though I do think that some of Bruce's selections and tactical decisions, his hands were forced because of injuries, etc.
I mean, the key one was obviously Davis playing up at top, which was a complete revelation.
Huge, but
I mean, we've sat there watching under 23 games. Mm-hmm. Saying this guy's a schmuck.
Well,
or words to that effect. We put it this way: he didn't stand out as anybody special.
He didn't, but against
Norwich, I thought this is one of the best debuts I've seen, and especially from a 19-year-old.
We got a glimpse, didn't we, last season, about 45 minutes of Davis, where you thought, he's got something.
Yeah.
But the Norwich fixture was a commanding display of. Do you know what it reminded me of? It wasn't a Benteke-esque performance. No, I don't want to. You don't want to pigeonhole players very early on. But it looked like the kind of performance who'd someone who'd watched Benteke and who was trying to do, particularly some of the hold-up play and the quick releasing and the strength. And
because that first moment your ears pricked up was, I think he had two men on him. Somebody played a ball and he kind of dispossessed one of them, and then he beat them both.
Yes.
And then suddenly he powered through with his pace and he was one-on-one. I mean, his finish was a bit lacking. He'd probably surprised to be there, but the fact that he made that chance out of nothing, that was Benteke-esque strength and power.
It was great, and it was nice to have I think especially in the opening period as well, he had two or three opportunities. I think if you were to fast forward and it was a more senior player, you'd say he probably should have took a couple of them.
Yeah.
But there was little things like, you're thinking, bloody hell, he's had four or five chances, or he's been involved in four or five moves. You know, things like crashing the bar, absolute bloody nuisance. And the Norwich's defence could not deal with him. And that was revelatory. And for me, as anyone who listens to this or reads my blog will know, no fan of Gabby. Everything that Gabby doesn't deliver, that kid came on and said, you know what, if I'm fit, I've got to be ahead of Gabby in the pecking order now.
Well, he did a few things that Codger doesn't do. I mean,
he did.
Horan's first goal where he laid it off for him, I'm sorry.
Superb.
But Codger would have shot from there. It would have gone into the side netting or...
No, I'd have caught it in the lower hold. So I chested it and then trapped it.
Or the keeper would have saved it. I mean, it wasn't an angle for scoring, but gives Bruce a big dilemma because if you're playing two up top, I would be tempted to go with Davis and Hogan.
I also think it gave him a huge dilemma because I'm pretty confident we'd have probably had a loney signing. Either was it Gallagher who was mooted?
Yeah. Who did he end up at the Blues?
Well, he suddenly was, he was on everyone's in the know lists, wasn't he? And then suddenly he was on the other side of Birmingham, wasn't he? Because I think Davis had absolutely. I mean, you don't know what happens at clubs like Villa where word gets around, doesn't it? They might be looking at bringing in a loan signing. He gets his chance, thinks, bugger this, I'm going to, kitchen sink this afternoon if given the chance, and good on him, actually.
I mean, that's the first thing I thought was, however real this interest is in Gallagher, fuck him.
why develop another club?
And by the way, we can sell Codger as well.
For $100 million in today's market. Yeah.
But no, Davis, very impressed. And he got the start again. I think it was touch and go in terms of if he was fit enough for the Bristol game. But, against Bristol again, he was all right.
Mm.
But the biggest news of the Norwich game, it wasn't the Hourihan hat-trick, which I think was pretty much down to Davis, a lot of it. No way Hourihan scores a hat-trick without Davis's overall contribution. But the main thing was Andre Green found his final touch.
It's a lovely goal, wasn't it?
After I pointed out that everything he does the last touch never seems to work, but that was a beauty to get the ball rolling.
Oh, it was fantastic, and it deserved the plaudits that it got, really. It was he was fantastic, and that's the bit of green where you think when he struggles to find that consistency in a game and he maybe repeats the same errors, but when it clicks for him, that's when you start to begin to think, wow, there's a really good footballer in here. And he's only 19.
Because I think we need him to make a decent contribution if we're going to get promoted this season, I think. Because it doesn't look like there's going to be anybody really coming in on the left-hand side.
Well, that's a very good point with the left-hand. We've got very few options. And it's a position that he can absolutely make his own. You worry about competition, though, don't you? That he could easily find himself on the team sheet by default. But to be fair to the guy, he's got bags of talent. And
I don't think he, because of his age and he's the novelty factor, he will. I mean, he's not going to slack off this season. No. He'll be trying his utmost. He's not going to get comfortable.
I also think he links up very well with Taylor personally, but you know, I think there's a nice combination there of it's not too complicated. Taylor sort of can get forward, but looks after the defensive bit, and a bit more traditional, which is how I like it. Yeah. That the attacking midfielder sees to that bit, and there's no overlapping, no unnecessary overlap.
Yeah, I mean there should be some overlapping, but Taylor's a bit more let's say is not bombing down the line recklessly and leaving us, let's say, short on numbers at the back. Norwich obviously haven't had the greatest start. I mean, they're in the relegation zone at the moment, and this is obviously Villa's only win. But what do you think about the fact that they had 63% of possession in that game?
I wasn't very impressed with them, I have to admit.
Is it a case of possession for the sake of it? Because I think that's what Norwich fans are saying dates back to, you know, the Villa Lambert.
I was just about to say, it was frighteningly similar football.
Yeah, where we just passed it sideways and backwards. And when Lambert tried the possession game, I think it's pretty much what's happening at Norwich at the moment.
Well, they scored their two goals and never looked like winning, did they? And that was...
Yeah,
I wasn't. They never built up a head of steam. It was a bit of a bizarre thing because the narrative online, and also through some of the, I heard a few Norwich fans on phone-ins, was that they've turned some sort of corner as well. And I thought they look very, very lacklustre for me.
From the Norwich side of things, I think their narrative at the moment is a team in transition, which has obviously been our constant.
That's a
narrative.
Dangerous narrative.
It is, isn't it?
My experience.
Negatron alert! No signings on deadline day, emergency! Get new owner! Get new owner!
Moving on to the Wigan game, that could have gone any which way. I think Wigan also rested a few players, but I knew, obviously, with the Friday game coming up against Bristol, that Bruce was going to change a lot of players, and he changed everybody.
I really enjoyed this football game.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect to. I took my free season ticket card entry or whatever the hell it was. I thought we played really, really well, and I have to say I was impressed by... I thought Delatt was good. I liked the switcheroo with Bree at centre-half and left-back across the two halves. Yeah, we conceded a silly goal.
Yeah.
I thought that the young kids... I thought Clark at full-back was really interesting. Doyle Hayes... And I got bags and bags and bags of stick on Twitter and on my blog for this, for saying that Gardner wasn't particularly impressive or good at all, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw him do one pass and they got excited.
You're the one person to defend me, thank you.
But I thought the consensus was that was it. That was his contribution, and a load of other people slagged him off.
Well, that was my view, and I think there's an assumption, and this is the binary nature of Twitter, isn't it? A word we've used before, binary. That I don't hate Gardner. I just don't think he's nearly good enough for where we want to be. And
no, I mean, I gave him so many chances because when you saw him, going back a few years now, in the next gen, and he'd be scoring an amazing hat trick against Ajax, where there was a header, there was a great free kick from about 30 yards, and then a finish, which was like, this guy, you know, this is, well, one comparison used to be, hopefully this is Villa's Steven Gerrard, but I mean, he got a lot of injuries, but then when he started to get in the team, it was almost like he was just happy to be in the team, and he wasn't really making any contribution to make that team better.
Well, let's take that word contribution. I think that in the confines of the Wigan game, that Doyle Hayes, a complete unknown, very young, inexperienced at senior level. Couldn't take your eyes off him. He was everywhere. And yeah. his contribution in terms of being disruptive, creativity, releasing the ball in a forward direction quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Gardner, for me, cut a... People said, oh, he ran everywhere. He covered every blade of grass. Well, so did Bjarnason on the night. Bjarnason ran around a lot.
Yeah.
But he didn't... It's about how effective you are. How, you know, what is your contribution to the game of football? Now, Bjarnason stuck the ball in the net. Gardner, for me, you know, there's two bits for him. I think he had two very, very serious injuries that hampered his development to becoming a top pro. No but, getting away from that.
But so did, you know, Fabian Delph, but he managed yeah, to finally yeah. carve himself a career.
It's no excuse, but I mean, only Gardner will know what the impact ultimately has been upon him. But I do, when I see him in the Villa team, how many people go, fantastic, Gardner's in the team? And it's not because we don't like him as a person or whatever, yada, yada, yada. He just simply is, he's not elevating us towards a team that's going to get promoted for me.
No, and this new wave of players, also including Callum O'Hare, who've just come in, you know, essentially this pre-season and yeah. onwards, have overtaken him already.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah.
they're playing without fear. They're not kind of riddled with that conservatism that a lot of Villa midfielders have had in the past few seasons, of being scared to make mistakes.
Well, they're not scarred, are they? And yeah, look at another player who, he's not our player, but he's a fantastic footballer, Anoma from Spurs. He had 30 minutes against Norwich where he played some absolutely sublime football, and he was linking fantastically with Davis before he went off. But you look at the... And fantastically, that looks to be the type of quality and that technical quality that is coming through the Villa Academy finally. That might not be a credit that's given to Lerner and co, but clearly some investment's gone in historically and it's starting to show through now. And I've been very critical of the Academy, but when I see players like Clark at fullback, Doyle Hayes, O'Hare, Davis, I can't help but say, do you know what? No, that's really good. That's really positive.
Yeah,
for the football
I mean, it's interesting because historically, well, historically, Villa's academy was always, you know, always pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going from youth FA Cup appearances and then the next gen, which was like the icing on the cake, where we could actually say we had one of the best. Well, we could say we had the best academy in Europe.
Yeah.
But then the years that followed that, it seemed to just whittle away. And I mean, we saw a few games last season, and. We thought, oh my, you know, this is not a vintage crop. But some of the players that we're talking about were playing in those games. So it's. I mean, when it comes to academy players, a season, you know, can make a big difference.
Absolutely.
So something's been happening. Maybe they've been doing steroids over the last year or so. Creativity steroids or something. Because
I thought it was a massive leap. It was a massive leap, and it was a massive realization. I don't know whether it's a. I walked away from the Wigan game thinking, hang on a minute. Instead of looking at single players and pinning our hopes on it, be it a Grealish, be it a Gardner, like the example you just gave. You know, I don't want to make the comparison too closely, but when Manchester United had huge success through their academy, they came as a crop, didn't they? They didn't come as ones or twos. They came as a group of players that, you know, have been kicking footballs against.
Plus a 92.
Yeah, well, that's how it happens. And, you know, I'd rather have, I suppose Liverpool's problem was that they only really had one or two that came through. Man United had a whole bunch that came through and dominated for the best part of a decade, didn't they, to different degrees. As I said at the start of Wales, the Wigan game, it can only be a good thing that these players are actually appearing in the first team. And a Doyle Hayes, for me, it's only one game. I'm not going to get carried away by one game. But he stood out head and shoulders technically. O'Hare, again, this ghosting around the D and playing balls across the full width of the pitch is unplayable sometimes for defences. And I think if he, with experience and, you know, it was interesting to see McCormack come on for 15 minutes and you see, you know, how he's having to try and rehabilitate himself to give himself a shout, you know.
Well, I was going to say, because the squad list for the Wigan game was leaked before the game, and people were saying, oh, fake, oh, they spelt Adomar's name wrong, it's a fake. Well, actually, when we got a new manager in Remy Gard, the club spelt his name wrong when they did the official announcement, so don't let
Gerard Houllier couldn't pronounce Abdominal either, could he? So.
That leak, it was a genuine, the squad was genuine. I think the biggest strange, weird thing about it was that Tommy Elphick suddenly appeared out of nowhere. Gardner was also on that team sheet, and McCormack was there as well. And they all, you know, two of them started. Obviously, McCormack came on later on.
Elphick didn't have a fantastic game, and it's interesting, you look around some of the, I do ratings after the games, as you know, and I thought he looked okay, but when he, you know, the one moment he was really challenged, he made a right hash of it and risked conceding a goal. Gardner, I've already spoken about my feelings on Gardner, yeah. And McCormack, you know, it's a bizarre thing. You think, what are people's agendas? That the Birmingham fail had him down as not having barely touched the ball when he came on. I saw a man who came on and really tried to work hard for 15-20 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
He looked mightily out of shape, don't get me wrong, but he came on, there were some smart touches, you know, but over 15 minutes you can't judge a lot either.
Yeah, so just in concluding on that game, Hogan, do you think he's done himself a big favour there? Because he looked more like the player that we actually bought, and he had the players, I think, more on his wavelength as well in terms of the young guys.
Well, scored a goal sliding in, and I have to say that the effort from on the turn, on the spin, on the bounce from the edge of the box, finish beyond their goalkeeper was really top drawer, and I think that will be
probably our goal of the season so far.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic finish, and I suppose the frustration with Hogan has been two parts for me. I do think he's had opportunities to, you know, on three or four occasions I can think of, even off the top of my head, he's hit the goalkeeper from about 6 yards, and then there's been other occasions where you think, what a fantastic run he's making. Why can't we find him? I do think with players like Hourihan playing more advanced up the pitch, though, we'll see more from Hogan.
I thought it was good that Bjarnason scored, because that will keep him becoming the official Leandro Bakuna scapegoat replacement straight away.
Bjarnason, he could very easily become that, couldn't he? Because we need a good scapegoat at the Villa. I felt really sorry for him from day one, because he's been all over the pitch on different jobs, different roles, different positions.
Yeah.
In the confines of the Wigan game, I thought he played really... He didn't start well. Yeah, there's a few loose passes, yada, yada, yada. But he persisted and was rewarded with a goal. And he also had two or three really good opportunities that he perhaps could have done better with. Improving? Would that be how I'd term Bjarnason? I think people need to almost park a default negative view of him, because I think he has struggled since he's arrived. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, everybody's after instant gratification, but, you know, some players do need time to settle in. I mean, I'm more concerned by the double barrel names of all these youth players. Doyle, Hayes, Hepburn, Murphy. I mean, what happened about giving opportunities for working class kids, not all these posh double barrel name dudes?
Yeah, like Rogers and such.
Discrimination, that's what I'm calling it.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Anyway, Bristol, I think if we won that, then everybody would be skipping and singing the praises of Bruce and saying that we're on our way to promotion. I think that was the big reality check. Because as with Villa, I mean, it reminded me, well, maybe it didn't. Remember under Lambert when we beat Liverpool 3-1 at Anfield?
I do, yes.
And we played them off the pitch and we thought, this is happy days. And the way we set up, we thought, right, this is a system, you know, we can really go for this. And, you know, we're on our way finally. That was the moment where we thought we had it. And then I think we played Everton in the next game and we weren't anywhere near as positive, and we seemed to play within ourselves, and I think we got beat 2 or 3 nil, I can't remember, but basically that derailed the whole Lambert revolution straight away. But you just found yourself thinking, why didn't he just play the same way as we did against Liverpool?
And
he'd found a system against Norwich where he had Hourihan playing in his proper role, which hopefully we bought him for. And then suddenly against Bristol, he uses 3 centre-backs. And it was almost comical in the first, let's say, half an hour or so, where our full-backs were, well, wing-backs were pushing up. And every time Bristol, and Bristol were pretty neat in possession. I mean, they played as a proper team going forward. They would just play that diagonal ball to the wing. And whoever they had on the wing, left or right, was further forward than our wing-backs. It was like open season attacking us. And they, you know, they could have buried us by the time we got into the game. I mean, what did you think of that when they lined up? Because that was the big smell in pre-season. That was the way he was. That was the way he was going to go. And then suddenly he didn't do it. And then here he suddenly finally reveals it as the answer to our away game woes.
Well, that's perhaps it, isn't it? I think that there's two parts to it from my point of view. It's the football is funny in the sense that you think, well, you found a winning formula, but it doesn't necessarily, you can't just plug it into every single game and it translates to the same thing. On the other hand, with our atrocious, absolutely atrocious away form, I can see why we're set up conservatively. I don't think it's the answer. I don't think it's necessarily right. I thought that, you know, you can go too conservative and you can invite problems.
Well, I think that has been the Villa problem.
We are totally setting up
too conservatively. We're giving the initiative to the home team straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And what have we been doing? Just relying on that kind of counter attack where we haven't got abundant pace as we have in previous times. I mean, even under Lambert, we were like the top team in the Premier League for counter-attacking goals, and then Martin O'Neill, you know, basically built his team around the counter-attack. But we don't really have that genuine pace. I mean, Green's good, but we'd have pace on all fronts, both wings and through the middle. We haven't got that.
Yeah, I think that's where this formation falls down, doesn't it?
So we've just been relying on Codgers, but we're not at Premier League level here. We are playing teams that, you look at our squad, home or away, we should just attack these teams.
Well, I was about to say,
play on our terms.
Yeah, I think playing on the front foot is what I would term it away from home. You know, you don't necessarily need to be as gung ho as you are at home, knowing that you know you're on your own patch. But I think that you look across, particularly our attacking options as a five across the midfield with a striker. You look at the names and how we can hurt the opposition. There's plenty of options, and it does puzzle me how we can't set up a solid back four, and then say, do you know what, we can rotate any combination of 4 or 5 other players depending upon the opposition. You know, because what I don't think the front runners in the league have necessarily established themselves, but I imagine what might work at a Bristol City in my head won't necessarily work away at Leeds. You know, that sort of thing. So that's why I think it's a tricky one. Because
but these teams should be fearing us when we turn up at their patch.
Well, that's why five, you know, the three at the back thing, it doesn't send the right message, does it? I think it's that balance between saying we're going to be solid.
Yeah.
And also unnecessarily changing the system so much, because we need to get a rhythm, don't we?
Exactly.
That's what I feel. I think it's something that's sort of come through from us separately, that a winning rhythm isn't best set up by changing things constantly either, and changing the personnel. And I wonder how much of this was forced by the proximity of the games. I don't know.
He essentially played let's forget about the Wigan game, because that's a different competition, but he played the same team bar Hutton changing for Samba. And all that needed was Bree to change for Hutton, and same team, same setup, just give it another go.
Be more positive. I suppose that would be the lesson learned off Bristol.
Yeah.
But then you sort of juxtapose it against the fact that we lost there last season, and I do stand by my earlier statements, really, that I think that last season we would have definitely lost that game having gone behind, and I think we'd have lost that game in the opening 2 or 3 weeks if we'd have gone behind as well. So there's the thing I noticed against Norwich and Wigan is when the opposition scored, we scored. So that's a significant change for me.
Well, I think we've got players now, and Omar, who we mentioned earlier on, I mean, he's
fantastic
somebody,
footballer.
I really think
he's a good footballer.
He drives us, and we haven't had that kind of dynamo in midfield who gets the ball at his feet, and the first thing he does is go forward, whether he's passing it forward or he's running with the ball.
Mm.
And we haven't really had somebody who gets the ball and, you know, runs with it. And that's why where you go 1-0 down and he's the first thing on his mind is, well, we just conceded a goal. The first thing on his mind is, let's get, you know, let's answer that.
I think the thing about Anoma is as well that it occurred to me when I was watching a bit of Premier League football was that last season we seemed to come up against teams who had a player who was a significant up-and-coming academy or youth player from another Premier League team.
And
you go, oh, who's he? You know, where the bloody hell's he come from? And then you look, oh, he's not even their player. We didn't seem to have that player for whatever reason. And it's not something I particularly like doing, which is developing other teams' players, because when you look at, you know, we've already talked about your Doyle Hayes and whatnot. But in our situation, and actually having seen the kid's talent, it's only to our benefit, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a bonus. You get him
absolutely.
Into the season, it's a bonus.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can sit around waiting for Grealish to do something, but this is a player who contributes and actually gives the team identity. I mean, he's one of the main drivers about the team, or one of the prime movers, should I say.
Absolutely, a very exciting footballer for the future for, you know, Tottenham.
We'll talk about Snodgrass in another podcast, but I think that this kind of, let's say, drip feeding of youth will see more against Middlesbrough in the next round of the Cup. But I don't think, you know, Hourihan's battling against Snodgrass, he's battling against, on the right, Snodgrass could be battling against Adomar or Elmo.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I really don't.
No, but then increasingly it's not going to be easy for the you know, Villa youth players to get much of a sniff.
No,
but as long as Bruce keeps them involved and they come on, because there's enough spark there for sure to contribute.
There's enough spark there, and there's enough fluidity in those peripheral places as well. You know, when we talk about the Snodgrasses and the Hourihans, and I think in rotation over 46 championship games.
Yeah,
and I do get a feeling the club is pleasing to for my mind. Got an interest in the League Cup. I do think that that's got some, you know, if we can get a group of players together, you know, like, for instance, Jed Steers, the cup goalkeeper in inverted commas. If we can get a, you know, a peripheral squad of players together who are interested, who are developing, who are, you know, knocking on the door, I think that's fantastic. I really think that when, you know, if it comes around to players needing to swap in or out, well, you know, we know who the decent players are and they're match fit, they're sharp, you know, it's good.
I'm hoping we get through the Middlesbrough game, because I think the more games we have in that cup, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not too sure that Middlesbrough will be particularly up for it necessarily. You know, I've read some of the local press reports, and granted that's only, you know, local journalists from Teesside, but I think looking at their appetite for two trips to Villa Park in the space of a week, you know, league and then cup, in their priorities, it doesn't seem to be massive at all. And I think that from Villa's point of view, this could be a good way of, you know, blooding more youngsters, establishing that, as I've just mentioned, the second string, if you like, but also advancing around, and then you could get a very interesting draw indeed.
Yeah, I mean, as we saw when we played West Brom in the Cup and the League, both at Villa Park, it definitely does help to have those games at home if you're playing the same team twice in a week.
Well, we've talked about, you know, how it galvanised the squad that year, and that was a dreadful squad, a terrible, terrible football team.
Where was it?
But Sherwood managed to,
yeah,
I think Bentekia's side, you know, Delph was sort of wedged in there. But beyond that, there wasn't a fat lot in my view. And we didn't get relegated that season. I know I'm repeating myself against a podcast a couple of episodes ago, but I think if you can carry that winning mentality, that winning rhythm, you know, it goes game to game to game, doesn't it? You know, you beat Norwich, you beat Wigan, you don't lose to Bristol. That's your momentum. It's, you're not losing.
Exactly. And if we can beat Middlesbrough and then we get a draw against Spurs away, then at least we go to Wembley.
Fantastic. And they don't win there, do they?
No, they don't. And this is a good thing. Normally you would be saying, well, we're four games away from Wembley. Now you're always just, as long as Spurs are still in the cup, you're only one game away from Wembley. Right, well, we're going to do another podcast where we'll field listener questions rather than have it all in one big long one. We wanted to split it up because it's just easier and quicker to get out the podcast that way. Don't forget to help us keep this podcast going by becoming a Mom's Patron. Go to myormansaid.com and check out Patron link and support us that way. And also, you know, if you're listening on iTunes, review it on iTunes. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said,
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.